not talk to Gary. Never have been. Where is he this morning? That's a good question. Well, just after midnight Saturday morning, Gary woke me up with intense, unbearable abdominal pain and needed to get to the hospital immediately. And so we headed to urgent care, and at 3 a.m. they admitted him for possible surgery for an intestinal obstruction. And I have to tell you that one of his biggest worries at this point was that he had talked to the liver this morning to you all. And the doctor told him that he'd better make other plans. And meanwhile, I had already started writing the talk. To give you an update, I stopped into the hospital on the way up here. He's doing much better. The obstruction is now unobstructing itself, and he will not be needing surgery, it looks like. And the doctor told him that he would allow him to start eating with the caveat that if he has one little problem, he's going to put a camera down his stomach to see what's going on. So that's the deal. And he told him this morning, so we all around this way, Dr. Gary, they get out. Experience self-love, connection with deep. You know, not rubbing it. In fact, it would just be an irritant if I kept it up. So I felt like I couldn't help him. I believed that. And that, so I had this need for empowerment. That's what was missing for me. I felt it was very disempowering to not be able to help him. And I clued in on that the need was empowerment, because I got triggered. And I started making judgments, you see. And so hospitals are not very restful places. Have you noticed this? First, the lights are sort of hideously bright. There is noise, not just little noises, banging, clanging, going on all over the place. There's beeping that's happening at this kind of water torture rate, you know, that drip, drip, drip. And I was in the midst of all that, feeling so worried about Gary, feeling helpless, and I decided, you know what, I'm going to take a moment, I'm going to meditate on the sounds. I'm going to let those sounds take me deeper into my heart. Well, you know what? That didn't work. Not at all. I got more irritated by the second. These people should be quieter. You know, this isn't helping. It's not going to help him heal. Don't they know that? Now, the problem with the cue process is that you can't get away with this anymore. You know what I'm saying? You can't unknow this stuff. Like, the time comes when you start to notice, oh yeah, it's connected to something deeper. And so I realized in that moment that this was empowerment that I was doing. And because as I watched Gary go through that, I felt powerless. And because of that, I started to notice all the things that I was also powerless to change. You see? And started getting angry, the noise, the light, the rage. For every doctor, every nurse, every employee who had aided us from the moment we walked through that door, I was grateful for free parking. Yeah. And an actual parking space near the door. And for the IV and the pain meds that were now working, and that the pain had subsided enough for Gary to fall into a sleep and be comforted, even with that lighting. I was grateful for the kindness of the doctor who came to examine him. I saw the depths of compassion in his eyes. He really cared that Gary was in pain and needed help. I was grateful for health insurance, modern medical care. And I suddenly felt connected to everyone. I felt like I was partnering with the medical profession. I appreciated each and everyone, and above all, I felt the deepest, deepest gratitude for my husband and the gifts that he brings to my life. And as I continued to furiously write all this in my little black book, I felt a shift inside of me that bridged the gap of separation. Do you see? Now, that gap had arisen with my judgment about what was lacking for me in the experience I was having, and gratitude was the superhighway that bridged that gap to my own well-being. Do you see how that works?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
It's such a small thing, really, if we can get ourselves to a place of gratitude. It starts the process. And so through gratitude, I was able to identify what that need was, and I gained back a sense of empowerment because I took action that demonstrated that by bringing forth this sense of partnering and then acting as his advocate whenever we had any kind of interaction with someone in the medical staff. And I did it with a deep feeling of gratitude. Now, did it make a difference in some way? I mean, did it actually contribute anything of value to that or to his healing? I don't know. But I do know this. I know that creating a coherent energetic field, which we do through the power of gratitude, changes our inner state and moves outward and affects all those around us. I do know that when there is scientific evidence that shows when a caregiver goes into a coherent state, that their loved one, even if he or she is in a coma, goes into the very same coherent state. I know that when people get together and meditate in order to lower the crime rate or lower the violence, that it works. They can measure that it works. And I know that when a group of eight gather and do intention work, that it has an effect not only on the person receiving the intention, but on the attendees themselves. And so if I really believe all this stuff, if I really believe all the research that I find so interesting and fascinating, then I have to believe that, yes, it made a difference in some way that I don't even know. But all that I really know is that my need to be empowered was met in some way, and that things became much more harmonious in my world. Now, feeling disempowered brought forth a sense of not enough, you know, that feeling of not enough. And that feeling stems directly from a belief in separation from spirit. It's a direct result of living our lives as if we were separate beings, cut off from our source, like a broken tree branch no longer attached to its source of nourishment. And by connecting to the heart, feeling gratitude, it was like I came into alignment with that oneness. Do you see that? With the source. That's the antidote, is to connect to the source. Connect to the source, the inner source. Why? Because that's where the needs are all met. Isn't that cool? Yeah. And then we want to consciously seek to be source in action. Be the change. Take authentic action that demonstrates what we want to see in the world. And so we stop looking outside of ourselves for our well-being, and instead we look within. We do the internal healing, learning how to do that. And practicing doing that on a regular basis is our spiritual work. Make no mistake. Because here's the thing about this. The world teaches us to look for what we need where? Outside of ourselves. And it also teaches that there's not enough to go around either. And that causes us to try to meet our needs in some outer way, through someone, through something. And it doesn't work. Have you noticed this? I mean, maybe we have a momentary respite, you know, we buy a new car, and all is well in our world, until it isn't. You know, my little Prius that's parked outside, I love my little Prius, it's now 13 years old and going strong, and I remember when I bought that car, it was the first brand new car I'd ever bought. I'd always bought secondhand up until then. It was a hybrid, too, and they were like new on the horizon at that time. And I loved it. I was on fire. And then the first week that I had it, I was driving on the freeway and a truck went by and hit a stone and it came up and it hit the windshield and put a mark in the top of the windshield. 3 days old. And you know, that mark is still there. Because I decided that that mark of impermanence was a good thing. That eventually this car is going to have cuts and scrapes, scrapes and bangs and dings in it, and that I may as well get used to it now, right? It was inevitable, but we can use that moment as, oh, life is wonderful, until it isn't, because when we look to have our needs met outside of ourselves, we end up suffering because we are now at the mercy of what's going on outside in our lives. Do you know what I'm saying here? Yes. And that is very disempowering. Wouldn't you agree? Because when we rely on and are at the mercy of what's happening outside of ourselves for our well-being, we lose that empowerment. And so just take a moment with me and imagine how different your life would be if you were able to meet the needs that arise in your life without going outside of yourself, without relying on someone or something to do so. And you know, that doesn't mean we don't ask for what we need or that we don't help each other to meet those needs. Certainly we do that, but we don't rely on it. Do you see the difference? Because we become empowered when we hold the key in our hands to meeting our own needs. Learning how to give ourselves what we commonly seek from others is the first step of overcoming a sense of not enough. You see, then we go into those relationships or whatever it is with a sense of wholeness and completeness already. We're not needy. We're not looking for someone else to complete us. So meeting our own needs is a superpower that we can learn. And the operative word there is learn. We have to practice. We have to practice. It takes some work to overcome years of conditioning. And empowerment's not the only need on the list. Another one that I dealt with this weekend was safety and security. And many of us struggle with this one. I mean, I was worried about Gary. I was fearful of what was happening. I thought he might have to have surgery. I was worried about him. I was unable to fix it. I was feeling very unsafe. I don't know what's going to happen. I can't control it. And when we look back on triggering moments that we have had, we usually will find that, especially if we say something we wish we hadn't, anybody have those kind of moments? We'll usually find it all happened because we didn't feel safe in some way and our fight and flight system was activated, right? And then we reacted. And we don't usually see that in the moment, but in hindsight, it becomes apparent to us. And the question becomes, well, how do I meet a need for safety? If I don't feel safe, how can I meet that need? God is calling. What's that song? Come on. I know that song. It's one of my favorites. So, when we don't feel safe, how can we help ourselves feel safe? Are you ready?
Yes.
Self-compassion. Seriously, self-compassion. And again, I got to practice that this weekend. That's the quickest way to bring ourselves to a sense of safety and security through the power of self-compassion. So let's unpack that a little bit. When I look back on my school years, safety is not a word that springs to mind. Anybody else have that experience? I was always afraid to speak up, worried that I was going to look foolish, humiliating. You know, that kind of thing. Didn't feel safe around teachers, peers. It felt like I didn't measure up to everybody else, was afraid to speak up. And what I realized that when I didn't feel safe, what was missing for me was compassion. There was not a lot of that where I went to school. In fact, the opposite was the typical environment. See? Not safe. No room for making mistakes. Not much compassion. A whole bunch of pointing and laughing. And this is not to say that people I grew up with were, to blame or were terrible people. I was right in there pointing and laughing. We were all caught in a web of fear and defensiveness, projecting our own belief that we didn't measure up on those around us. Do you know what I'm talking about here? And so how safe is it to roam the neighborhood of your mind? Do you have that insane roommate, you know, that one that we talked about in the Untethered Soul, yapping away in there? When you look around the world, do you see evidence of people having a need for safety that's not being met? Or self-love, or empowerment, all those needs? Look online and we'll see what a jungle it is out there. And we all have grown up immersed in this human condition that comes from a belief in separation. It all stems from that. And compassion is the antidote, especially self-compassion. Can you see how by practicing having deep compassion for yourself until it becomes your baseline, how that can create for you a sense of safety, how it can meet that need. When the environment within me makes it okay for me to make a mistake, to trip and fall on my face up here and just get up and dust myself off, I'm not going to do it, but hopefully, but makes it okay that if I do, I'm going to give myself compassion. Do you see how safe that is? And any child in that kind of a learning environment will flourish where it's safe to make mistakes. We want to do that for ourselves. Because what happens in an environment where every mistake is pounced on and laughed at? I remember reading a story once about two groups of would-be authors who gathered together in the 1940s. One was a male group. They called themselves the Stranglers. The other was a female group called the Wranglers. Now, the Stranglers used to meet once a week with their writing, and they would tear each other's work apart. They were merciless. They put it under a microscope of criticism, and they were trying to help each other improve their writing. Now, the Wranglers did the same thing, but instead, when they got together, they would support each other with some helpful feedback when asked for, but generally, they just celebrated each other's successes and continued to encourage them along the way. And when you look at the young men who were in the Stranglers, not one of them ever went on to publish anything. The Wranglers, on the other hand, between them, they all published articles, books, research papers, all of them published works. Now, guys, this is not to make it sound like the men did it wrong and the women did it right, or that there's never a time for constructive feedback, but to say that when the environment is such that it is okay to not do things perfectly, then learning happens, you see, because it's safe. So I invite you to practice self-compassion, to create that environment within yourself where it's okay for you to make mistakes, where you don't have to be perfect. Now, there's one more piece to this we want to mention today, because not only do we want to give ourselves what we needed, we want to lavish that on the world, do you see? So here's a question. What was missing for you as a child? What was an unmet need that you have had in your childhood that you can identify right now, if you kind of think that one through? And maybe it's a sense of being valued no matter what. See, I just read, unconditional love means that we love someone even when they don't meet our conditions. That makes sense to me, see? And that kind of love seems to be a rarity in our culture. And if you were lucky enough to grow up in that, I celebrate with you. But if not, this is a good insight to have. And this is not about blame or making our parents responsible for how our life is. We do this with objectivity, what was missing. And in my case, as I mentioned, compassion was missing from my school life. And so then the next step to look at is, first, how can you give that to yourself, whatever was missing for you, self-compassion for me, then how can you give that to the world? Do you see? Whatever was missing for you, that's what you're here to bring and give to the world. Isn't that cool? I get so excited about this. Because I have to tell you, when I am teaching about self-compassion, when I'm writing about it, when I'm coaching people on how to do it, nothing gives me more joy. Do you see? So the next step in learning to meet your own needs is to give it away. That's why we're here. So let me ask you, what need did you have as a child that was unmet? And how can you give it to the world? So to recap, gratitude is the superhighway. Oh, yeah, give it to the world. There's the world. It's waiting. Gratitude is the superhighway. From an unmet need to well-being. Self-compassion is the antidote to a need for safety and security. And give yourself what you needed as a child and then lavish it on the world. We are all here to bring peace to our world. And this is how we do it. And the world needs you to take action. Are you ready?
Yes.
Let's say it like we mean it. Are you ready?
Yes.
Woo! Now, before this completes my talk that I wrote on a little black book yesterday. But before we finish, I want to introduce some people who are here today. And come on down. This is Dawn Guyverson, Margaret Tivron, and they are. Dawn was my board president in Canada yes. Good to see you. He was so unfortunate to be my board president when Gary came on the scene and stole me away from the church. And he just worked so wonderfully with me. And Margaret and Dawn and Margaret now live in Nanaimo, BC. They moved to British Columbia. And are you doing ministry? Starting to do ministry.
Yeah.
And so they are here just for the weekend. They came for the weekend, and they're here today, and then we were going to go for lunch. I'm still going to take you for lunch, but Gary won't be joining us, just so you know. So I just want us all to welcome them, and we're glad you're here. Thank you. It's good to be with you all. Thank you. I could feel everyone's love and support the whole weekend I was there. And I want you to know that Gary, this morning when I saw him, he was so much better. And he said, I had the whole talk written, he said. And I said, I know. And he said, and when I told him, well, I just took your title. Well, I'm still going to do my talk. I said, go for it, Gary. So I bring greetings from him and blessings and thank you all.
Gary's will just be version 2. Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths for God. For we know that there is only one power, one presence, and one life. So whoever you are,